Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Monty Jam's Connecting with the Creator.
Welcome back, everybody. So this week, me and Jake have made a decision to take a little break from Job. I think for me, I was just getting a little overwhelmed and didn't really have good explanations for everything that was going on, and I almost felt like I was Job and that I was struggling to understand this whole thing, and I just needed to set myself aside and take a little break and go into another book of the Bible because I didn't want to quit doing this podcast mainly. And I was feeling frustration. So we spoke about it, and this week we decided that we're going to go into Proverbs, see if we can get some wisdom and some insight in there, and maybe give us a little bit more enjoyment and just practicality in our daily lives. So, gonna start out. I'm just gonna read the introduction that my Bible has, and then we'll start off in chapter one. So, introduction to Mishlei Proverbs. An Israelite society, wise men, sages, evolved alongside the Kohanim, priests, and prophets. Whereas the Kohen, priest, and prophet had many mainly religious duties, the wise men were more concerned with the practical side of life. The Proverbs tended to distill generally accepted truths about God and his relationship to the wicked and to the good, without addressing in detail the many exceptions that existed. Wisdom, the main concern of Proverbs, has its source in God and is accessible to humanity. Humanity's relationship to life is categorized into two opposite paths: the path of the righteous and the path of the wicked. Moral excellence comes only from being rightly related to God, fearing him, and acquiring wisdom. The corpus of wisdom literature in the Tanakh includes the book of Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Songs. Job and Ecclesiastes belong to this category because they wrestle with some of the more complex perplexities of life. We definitely experience that. Although the book of Psalms contains several wisdom psalms, it is considered part of the wisdom literature primarily because of its poetic genre. The Song of Song offers wisdom on how to live wisely in courtship and marriage. This genre includes proverbial statements, debate, intellectual reflection, instructions about mastering life, and seeking life's secrets. The concept of wisdom presupposes that there is order at work in God's moral universe, and improper moral conduct threatens this order. Although some expositors understand wisdom to be the pursuit of the right attitude and making sense of a disordered world, wisdom is more accurately the search for an order already embodied in God's creation for the purpose of living in harmony with it. Wisdom is not an inborn trait, temperament, or intellectual acumen, but rather an experiential relationship to the Creator. Some expositors have claimed that there is no relationship between the rest of Tanakh literature and wisdom literature. However, the fear of Adonai, obedience to the Torah of Moshe, Law of Moses, creation theology, and the call to love, obey, and trust God provide the primary lines of agreement with the rest of the Tanakh and Jewish theology. So there's your introduction to Proverbs.
Okay. And then you want me to read chapter one?
Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. For gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. My son, if sinful men entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, come along with us, let's lie in wait for innocent blood. Let's ambush some harmless soul. Let's swallow them alive like the grave, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Cast lots with us. We will all share the loot. My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths. For their feet rush into evil. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net where every bird can see it. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush only themselves. Such are the paths of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the life of those who get it. Out in the open, wisdom calls aloud. She raises her voice in the public square. On top of the wall, she cries out. At the city gate, she makes her speech. How long will you who are simple love your simple ways? How long will mockers delight in mockery and fools hate knowledge? Repent at my rebuke, then I will pour out my thoughts to you. I will make known to you my teachings. But since you refuse to listen when I call, and no one pays attention when I stretch out my hand, since you disregard all my advice and do not accept my rebuke, I in turn will laugh when disaster strikes you. I will mock when calamity overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you. Then they will call to me, but I will not answer. They will look for me, but will not find me, since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord. Since they would not accept my advice and spurned my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm.
So I think verse 7 is the very beginning of this. Fear of Adonai, or God, is the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and discipline. And, you know, I think when we go into society and we go into the world, that there's this big conglomerate of different morals and standards where you don't really know what one person considers wisdom and discipline, another person considers having too strict of laws and too rigid, and that they need to relax and not be so judgmental and strict. And so it's just like, you know, as society advances, those things kind of deteriorate, and what is right and what is wrong, and that moral code of things. I think that's something that we're seeing in the world today.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, a lot of it has to do with the things that influence us, and sometimes we don't realize the things that we see, the things that we hear, whether it's music, how it can impact us and just give us new ideas, create new expectations of what we expect of people, what we expect of ourselves, how we judge people, maybe the anxiety that we give it because we listen to these songs where they're talking about how people are looking at us or judging us, and then we take that on ourselves, and then you get nervous being around people because you think that they're expecting you to do something and to be perfect, and it's just a great big mess. And this is kind of getting away from the main point that I was trying to make here, is that, you know, the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. And, you know, what does that mean? Well, that means going back to the first 5 books of the Bible and figuring out what it means to fear God and, you know, his commandments, and being fearful of those and trying to be obedient of those, because we fear him and his wrath. Or we I don't think it's also a fear, but it's a matter of faith and trust, right? And desire.
Yeah.
To be obedient.
Yeah. That saying of fearing the Lord is not necessarily that he exists and that you should be scared that he exists, but fear fear the consequences of not following what he says and knowingly doing the wrong thing, or even, I don't know, I guess just reaping what you sow, in that since he does exist, if you live out this horrible life, then you get what's coming to you, basically. And just kind of fearing that, and in turn wanting to live a better life because you know the consequences of living a malicious life, I guess, is how I always interpret it.
Yeah, and I think if I'm hearing you right, what you're saying is not so much fearing God and his punishment, but fearing the consequences of our actions from doing things that we know we shouldn't be doing based on his word.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's something I think I've caught myself doing here. And, you know, maybe some of it has to do with moving to a bigger city where there's more people, there's more competition. There's also, and with more competition, it's more of a desire to try to be different, be better, and to try to be the best version of yourself that you can possibly be, and mm-hmm. put yourself, present yourself in the best way that you possibly can. And inside of that, sometimes it's easy to get caught up in trying to impress other people. And then when you don't impress them or you don't receive their acceptance, looking inside yourself and wondering, you know, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? How can I be better? And, you know, this was something that we have to look at, and we have to look deep within ourselves and our souls and be able to realize it's not so much what other people think of me that is going to help me sleep good at night and to be happy when that last day that each of us encounters comes along. Mm-hmm. It's when that last day comes along and when we go to sleep at night, it's the realization that God has been happy with how I've lived today, and he's been impressed with who I've been, and he's accepted who I am as a person mm-hmm. or as individuals. And just always trying to have that mindset as we go through this journey in life, and our daily approach and our hourly approaches and our monthly approaches, and how we approach people around us. If we have that fear of the God, realizing that this is somebody that the Creator put here on this earth, gave them an opportunity to breathe, like, how do I respect that? And how do I impress him and be accepted by him? And the difficultest thing is to set down, like, trying to get acceptance from other people, mm-hmm. because that can feel really, really good inside. It can be right. really, really nice. But when it's all said and done, that's not what's important.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And I think, you know, this first chapter just kind of dealt a lot with that, what wisdom is, and how we instill that in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you were saying, or I tried to kind of give a definition of what I thought you were saying, which is the consequences of our actions. And one of the examples that I was thinking about as you were sharing what you were sharing, it's not so much being worried about God's wrath, or like when our parents were punishing it, it wasn't so much acting good because you didn't want another spanking, but it was acting good because you knew that if you chose to act good, your life would result in a more positive manner
right.
for the future, and that you were being disciplined not because they wanted to spank you or you know they wanted to hurt you, but it was because they wanted to correct you so that in the future mm-hmm. your life actions would be put on a better trajectory than what could be if you didn't choose that route.
Right. Yeah.
Do you have anything to add to chapter one?
I do not.
All right. Chapter two. My son, if you will receive my words and store my commands inside you, paying attention to wisdom, inclining your mind toward understanding, yes, if you will call for insight and raise your voice for discernment, if you seek it as you would silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of Adonai and find knowledge of God. For Adonai gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up common sense for the upright, is a shield to those whose conduct is blameless, in order to guard the courses of justice and preserve the way of those faithful to him. Then you will understand righteousness, justice, fairness, and every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart, knowledge will be enjoyable for you, discretion will watch over you, and discernment will guard you. They will save you from the way of evil and from those who speak deceitfully, who leave the paths of honesty to walk the ways of darkness, who delight in doing evil and take joy in being stubbornly deceitful, from those whose tracks are twisted and whose paths are perverse. They will save you from a woman who is a stranger, from a loose woman with smooth talk, who abandons the ruler she had in her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. Her house is sinking towards death. Her paths lead to the dead. None who go to her return. They never regain the path to life. Thus you will walk on the way of good people and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will live in the land, the pure-hearted will remain there. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, the unfaithful rooted out of it.
It was kind of talking about kind of what we were just talking about in that, where is it? Then you will understand if you search for it as if it were treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord. And then it talks about going into knowing right from wrong and doing what is fair and not straying away from the path, and kind of just what we were talking about with fear of the Lord kind of comes that hope for discipline and the ability to know right from wrong and things like that.
But I think the desire to do his best or to be obedient of his commandments is what gives you all of these, I think, you know, kind of hedges and safeguardings and blessings who delight in. They will save you from a woman who is a stranger, from loose, who abandons the ruler. It's because, like, these understandings, you're not going to be provoked by these things because your ways are so set. It's, you know, I think an example of this is, like, if you're, I don't know, if you're alone and you're around a group of people who you know are doing things that you never really want to take part of or that are wrong, you're never going to put yourself in a situation to where you would be there. And at some point, you're going to put yourself in a mindset to where you have no desire to be around people who are doing those types of lawless things or ungodly things, to the point where maybe at the beginning it was a difficult thing because, like, man, these people were my friends. These are the only people I knew. Growing up in a small town, like, I really wanted to fit in, and it was really, really hard. And the more you do it, and then the more you, you know, realize who you are and committed to who you are and happy with the life that you chose, even though sometimes it may feel lonely or difficult just to be the only one doing these things, at some point you come to the realization that you're happy with who you became, and it's way more important than anything else out there, to where you can just look and be like, it's not me. And where it's not so maybe intimidating or frustrating, anxiety driven. Like, I don't know if you, as a kid, do you remember, like, really wanting to fit in, or you just really wanted to be part of the group. You couldn't be. And then as you get older in life, it's like, yeah, I would have liked to. I'd like to be part of that group, but it's like, what they're doing just isn't me. And so now I've came to just be happy with who I am and and enjoy that much more, you know?
Right. Yeah. Once you gain that wisdom, the temptations stop being temptations. They're just kind of something you see and kind of let go. It's not anything that takes up space in your mind.
You know, and I think for me, the last part here, where it goes into chapter or verse 21, for the upright will live in the land, pure hearted will remain there, but the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the unfaithful rooted out of it. It's just like the land, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, that's for me, like, when you have such a sacred book like this, it would be really special for me to one day just be able to go to Israel and be able to experience some of these like old historical mm-hmm. moments and where they were, just to be able to see if there's some type of feeling. You know, I think me and you come from a more logical perspective, and I don't know if you're maybe more in touch with your feelings or your emotions or a special feeling if you go to a place or anything like that, but for me, I would just like to see what it was like to mm-hmm. to see it, you know?
Yeah.
To be part of these special places.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever been to New York, like where the Twin Towers were or anything like that?
Mm-mm.
No, yeah.
No.
Me either.
But yeah, it's like sites like that hold a, there's like a, I don't know. There's an attitude that comes with it, and there's like an energy, and you feel it when you're there. It's just places like that. They hold a significance even through time.
Yeah. Do you have any special places that have been part of your life where there was just a really good experience, or maybe a really difficult experience or anything like that that still holds a place there?
Not that I can think of right off the top of my head. No.
Okay. I know for me, I had a really difficult time after our parents lost their log cabin, the house, mm-hmm. like, it was really difficult to try to like even go down that road mm-hmm. and just to see it, because it was something that used to be home.
Right.
And then in like a week's time, I remember Dad coming up to me and sharing like, hey, like, sorry, Chad, but we got to move. Like, we can't live here anymore. And I was like,
right.
What? Like, it wasn't like something that, you know, I had paid for.
Right, right.
It wasn't like that house had such special meaning because it was where we grew up. It was something that like mom and dad built.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a lot of emotional attachment. And it was just really hard to always drive by there and realize like it wasn't something that somebody paid for and mom and dad chose to leave there. Mm-hmm. It was something that was like lost and taken away because
right.
our, you know, of decisions and stuff. And so
right.
that's one of those places that I just, yeah, like, huh. I don't know. You have any childhood places where you have some really fond memories or anything? I guess grandma and grandpa's house where Isaac and mom and dad live.
Yeah.
But for me, the log cabin just had so many more special memories because, you know, every summer, the batting cage was right out in front of the house there. Like, that's where I hit thousands and thousands of mm-hmm. balls. And I tried to, you know, work on my career of wanting to play professional baseball.
Right.
And it was just right there, out in that front yard, and just pitch after pitch after pitch. And it was just, yeah, really special.
Interesting. Alrighty, you want me to go into chapter 3?
Yeah.
Okay. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you peace and prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, as a father the son he delights in. Blessed are those who find wisdom, those who gain understanding, for she is more profitable than silver, and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. Those who hold her fast will be blessed. By wisdom, the Lord laid the earth's foundations. By understanding, he set the heavens in place. By his knowledge, the watery depths were divided, and the clouds let drop the dew. My son, do not let wisdom and understanding out of your sight. Preserve sound judgment and discretion. They will be life for you, an ornament to grace your neck. Then you will go on your way in safety, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Have no fear of sudden disaster or of the ruin that takes the wicked. For the Lord will be at your side and will keep your foot from being snared. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is in your power to act. Do not say to your neighbor, come back tomorrow and I'll give it to you, when you already have it with you. Do not plot harm against your neighbor who lives trustfully near you. Do not accuse anyone for no reason when they have done you no harm. Do not envy the violent or choose any of their ways. For the Lord detests the perverse, but takes the upright into his confidence. The Lord's curse is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the home of the righteous. He mocks proud mockers, but shows favor to the humble and oppressed. The wise inherit honor, but fools get only shame.
I think there's, you know, a lot of wisdom that comes from, what did he say? When he compared something to gold, I think it was.
In verse 14.
Yeah, for her profit exceeds that of silver. Okay. Happy the person who finds wisdom, the person who acquires understanding, for her profit exceeds that of silver. Gaining her is better than gold. And it's like, well, financially, those things are very, very precious. But it's like once you realize the peace and the removal of stress that comes from understanding and wisdom and not always trying to maybe fit in or be part of a crowd or whatever it is, and just being sound in that, you realize just how much more peace you're at it with life in terms of not trying to be in the rat race.
Right. And it also kind of exemplifies the idea that just gaining wisdom and understanding of anything, really, it just makes your ability for becoming profitable and yielding however much in whatever field, it makes it that much easier. Whereas if you just had silver or gold but no wisdom or understanding, you'd be better off with just gaining wisdom in the first place.
Yeah, and I think that's similar to the idea of someone who wins the lottery, right? So they win a lot of money. And they go and they take it and they don't have it anymore. Or to someone who has a little bit of money and they invest the money properly and it just builds over time, over time, over time. And well, maybe they didn't ever get to acquire some of the things that the person who won the lottery got to acquire, but what they have at the very end is much more than that other person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something I wonder is chapter 9, it says, honor Adonai with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your income. And so it's like, you know, how do we do that in today's day and age? What does it look like? Because I think the normal religious standard would be, well, you donate it to your church. Right. And yeah. You give it then. Some people would say maybe you give it to the stranger or to the poor. But it's like, realistically, like, you know, sometimes I wonder if it's our time, you know. Mm-hmm. Honor Adonai with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your income. Is it with our time? And if it is with our time, how do we do that? Is it by reading? Is it by praying? Is it by giving gratitude, praising? Like, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. Is it financially? Because, like, financially, how do we give God any money? Like, we don't.
Right.
But back in the Old Testament, we look at a religious system that had priests and elders. And so in order for them to survive and to be judges and to do their daily duties, they had to earn something from the people who were actually out working and, mm-hmm. and providing.
Right. Yeah, I guess where my mind always goes when it's saying stuff like that, and just kind of the idea of tithing, is not necessarily giving to the church, because in modern time, not all churches, but some churches are definitely just taking that money and not really doing much with it other than basically taking the money for themselves. But I just see it more as like funding like mission trips and things like that, not even necessarily through the church, but just using it in a way that like God would want you to, I guess, and kind of benefiting not only yourself, but all the people around you, and just spreading joy and happiness and knowledge and wisdom, even through however it is, even if it is just your time. You can do so much with your time that honors him, and you don't, it's not just so black and white as donating to a church or not donating to a church. If you don't donate to a church, you're a bad person or anything like that. Because, I mean, realistically, there's a sound reason as to why you wouldn't donate to a church, because it's not 100% clear. It's not transparent as to where your money is going. And you see all of these people who maybe have like these super churches and ride around on private jets and stuff like that. It's like, why would I donate to that, you know?
Yeah, and their reasoning would be because they can get to spread the word quicker on a private jet.
Right, right.
Be able to do on a bicycle.
Right.
And that's where I really struggle, is because you have so many churches out there today, like within a mile radius, there's I don't know how many churches here. And it's like, well, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's because there's so much division. Is it because each one of these pastors has something that they want to say? Is it because they have an agenda that they want to preach so that they can have a specific following for them?
Hmm.
Because the whole goal is to spread and to market themselves and to get more followers. But it's like, what is the whole point?
Mm-hmm.
Is the whole point to market people and to get more followers? Or is it the whole point to be able to draw people closer to the creator of the universe and try to help them align with him and have a better relationship? If that's what it is, great. But everybody says that, but they all have a different mm-hmm. message when it comes time for Sunday. It's like, no, it's not like all their messages are the exact same. And I get maybe it hits people differently. We all have different personalities and, you know, and those types mm-hmm. of things. I understand that. One of my biggest struggles is that I love getting under people's skin and like making jokes and just sometimes feel like just seeing people upset and frustrated, because I don't know why that is. It's just, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of just fun. And then I read like, don't plan harm against your neighbor who lives beside you trustingly. Don't quarrel with someone for no reason if he has done no harm to you.
Right.
I was like, oh, dang. because it's like jokes and humor, right? So it's like, it's like some things can just be inappropriate to other some people, and then some people aren't. Like, I was just heard a podcast a couple of days ago where one guy goes over to his buddy's house, and the buddy was telling the story. And he's like, yeah, like Nick's little kid came up to me and he offered me a drink of water, and I was like, oh wow, like okay, yeah. And he's like, wait, he's not tall enough to get up to the sink. Where did you get that? Nick, where did you get that? Nick, did you get that water out of the toilet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Drink it. And it was like they come to find out the dad goes back there. He's like, yeah, there's a puddle from the toilet. Like, it was like, okay, this is a joke, but like,
yeah.
Like it's like, I don't know whether that's funny or if that's just like inappropriate to where it's, dude, your kid needs to be disciplined. Like, you need to paddle his butt or do something.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, it is funny. And it was like, okay, like, where do you draw the line with these types of things? It was just, it was so awkward. It was like, I don't know if this is funny. I don't know if I should just be judgmental here and be like, dude, you need to be a better dad. Like, that's really appropriate. And it's just like these types of things, it's like, I can see where it's funny, I can see when I can laugh, but I can also see where that's really inappropriate and I shouldn't laugh. And it's just like, I don't know what to do. Like, so it's just like these types of things are like going to divide friends, because like, oh, you know, if you don't laugh, it's this, if you do, it's like, oh my goodness. So,
yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about chapter 3?
I do not.
Right. Chapter 4. Listen, children, to a father's instruction. Pay attention in order to gain insight, for I am giving you good advice. So don't abandon my teaching. For I too was once a child to my father, and my mother too thought of me as her special darling. He too taught me. He said to me, let your heart treasure my words. Keep my commands and live. Gain wisdom, gain insight. Don't forget or turn from the words I am saying. Don't abandon wisdom. Then she will preserve you. Love her, and she will protect you. The beginning of wisdom is get wisdom. And along with all your getting, get insight. Cherish her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will bring you honor. She will give your head a garland of grace, bestow on you a crown of glory. Listen, my son, receive what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I'm directing you on the way of wisdom, guiding you in paths of uprightness. When you walk, your step won't be hindered, and if you run, you won't stumble. Hold fast the discipline. Don't let it go. Guard it, for it is your life. Don't follow the path of the wicked or walk on the way of evildoers. Avoid it. Don't go on it. Turn away from it and pass on, for they can't sleep if they haven't done evil. They are robbed of sleep unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, shining ever brighter until full daylight. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They don't even know what makes them stumble. My son, pay attention to what I am saying. Incline your ear to my words. Don't let them out of your sight. Keep them deep in your heart, for they are life to those who find them, and health to their whole being. Above everything else, guard your heart, for it is the source of life's consequences. Keep crooked speech out of your mouth. Banish deceit from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze on what lies in front of you. Level the path for your feet. Let all your ways be properly prepared. Then deviate neither right nor left, and keep your foot far from evil.
Something that I was going to ask last chapter, but I forgot. This is written from the perspective of Solomon, correct? Or
so I think that's the thought of who authored the book, but I didn't really see when that very first thing that I wrote.
Right. So I remember the very first chapter, the first couple of verses of Proverbs said something about Solomon, the son of David, but then it never really went into
Yeah, so, you're right, Solomon.
Okay.
I mean, I felt like that chapter was very self-explanatory, kind of going based on all the other things that we had already really talked about, kind of another way of continuing on with the benefits of being righteous and listening.
Right. You want me to just go into chapter 5 then?
Yeah, sure.
My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Turn your ear to my words of insight, that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. For the lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths wander aimlessly, but she does not know it. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you lose your honor to others and your dignity to one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich the house of another. At the end of your life, you will groan. When your flesh and body are spent, you will say, "How I hated discipline. How my heart spurned correction. I will not obey my teachers or turn my ear to my instructors. And I will soon in serious trouble, and I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares? Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breasts satisfy you always. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? From your ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all your paths. The evil deeds of the wicked ensnare them. The cords of their sins hold them fast. For lack of discipline, they will die, led astray by their own great folly."
So, I mean, here I think it really has to do with not so much a stranger, but kind of letting in people with different moral standards or views, allowing those types of things into our life, and then maybe seeing those things and then being enticed by those things. And I think that could be going back to a lot of things, you know, like in today's society, it could be video games, it could be social media, it could be TV, and like different religious views, different moral standards are in so many different things for the general public, to where it would be very, very, very for the waters to get muddied and to not having an understanding, and then for you to be able to turn from your beliefs because you're just like, this is 85% good, but 15% but say, it seems okay, you know, thing, you know, even growing up, like rap music and anything with profanity, it's like, you know, I think I'm really trying to work on doing a lot better job with my tongue and like swearing and stuff, because I think it's so easy for society. It's just that they become the norm, and sometimes it gets funny, and it's an easy way to express ourselves. And when we express our ways that express ourselves that way, it's like an acceptable form currently. And it means like, oh, well, this person must really, really, really care enough to about what they did is wrong, that they're frustrated. Good that they're frustrated, because it's like they're trying to be perfect and they're not. It's,
right.
It's like, what's the real reason for me using these types of expressions?
Right.
Like, where does it really come from? That's something I've been considering.
Something that I kind of took away from this chapter is kind of how we were talking about earlier with like all the wisdom and discipline that you gain, those temptations stop appearing as temptations, and they're just kind of something else that you don't pay any mind to. Where in this verse, it was, or this chapter, it was talking about basically marriage and adultery, and it was saying, why be intoxicated with another man's wife? And it was talking about just loving your wife to basically the fullest. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. And it's just being so enthralled and in love with the person that you have, that those external forces and temptations and whatnot that other people may see, you don't really see because it's like a non-thought to you. And it's just kind of what we were talking about earlier with that in any sense, really.
But again, I think that's, you know, what makes social media so dangerous is that we're seeing the best of everybody else, best of families, best of other people's spouses, best of friends. And so it's that, it's like, oh, well, this person has something that I don't have, or their life is so much better than mine, and things are going so much better over there. And it just entices us so much to be like, oh, well, this must not be good, instead of just working through stuff and realizing and accepting that we all are imperfect. We all have big struggles, but it's about how we communicate and how we love and just deal with those things. That it's everybody has a different type of difficult. But it's so difficult to realize that when we look at something like social media and just see the best of everybody's best, and it makes it really, really hard.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things is, this is what it all comes back to in my perspective, is having a really strong community of other people who have a very similar belief system and moral compass as you, and spending a lot of time with them. Because if you continue to do that, you have that strength, you have that power, you have that, just that will to not want to go and do other things, to where when you don't have that and you're just alone, it's just like trying to, you know, really reach out to just about anybody who will just accept you who will accept you and let you in.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that means you having to accept them. And if you can accept them and their moral compass that you may never really would have accepted, then they accept you. And then you get a little lackadaisical on what's accepted, and you start doing things that, you know, you probably never would have, just be for friends. And that's why I think community is so important, who we surround ourselves with, not so much just in terms of success, but, you know, in terms of mentally and emotionally and those types of things. It's wow. Sometimes it's better to be alone than it is to be around monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you wanted to add to this?
No, I think, you know, ending, actually, I was just looking right there at verse 24, chapter 4, keep crooked speech out of your mouth, banish deceit from your lips, let your eyes look straight ahead, you know, fix your gaze on what lies in front of you. That's where you have this tunnel vision, and you're not just always being distracted by the things of this world and society. It can be really, really difficult.
Yeah.
What's the true purpose of life? What is it? Is it laughter, love, enjoying our friends and family's company? Realistically, that's it. That's all it is.
Mm.
It comes in different forms of, oh, well, this restaurant and this experience and this vacation or whatever, but it's oftentimes just a closeness with the people that are really, really special and important to us, who share the same values, and just being able to enjoy that.
Yep.
That's what can bring us close to the Creator and to the created, His creations. that's all I have to share for the first five chapters of Proverbs. Alrighty. It's nice to kind of get out of Job a little bit. Yeah. Just go through that. See.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty.
Okay. Anything else to say to these beautiful folks out there listening?
No.
All one.
Two-thirds. No.
Two-thirds. So, well, our little niece listens to some of these, so.
Yeah.
We don't give her a full count.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's about it for me.
Okay. All right, everybody. Well, we always appreciate you guys tuning in. For us, it's just an enjoyable experience to have brother-to-brother fellowship and just reading and being able to hear each other's thoughts and ideas and how life is impacting us and mm-hmm. what we can learn from the word that we have here today.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate everybody listening. Thanks for being a part of this, guys.
Yep. See you, everybody.